Welcome to Product Mastery Now, where we simplify the seven knowledge areas for product mastery. These are the product management practices that elevate your influence and create products your customers love. To see all seven areas and assess your strengths in product mastery, go to my website. That's productmasterynow.com. I'm Chad McAllister, a product management professor, practitioner, and your host. Today, we're talking about why organizations are increasingly facing the need to transform and how to navigate those changes. If you have experienced a big change yourself, you already know firsthand how challenging this is. All of us need to know the principles that make transformation successful. And that is what we'll take away from this discussion together. Joining us is John Rossman, who was an early executive at Amazon and led the launch of the Amazon Marketplace. And this is what allowed the third-party businesses that we now know Amazon for so much to be able to sell on Amazon. Too many packages show up at my door each week. He is a four times author, including bestseller of The Amazon Way and the Think Like Amazon books, as well as a sought-after business advisor and keynote speaker. His expertise is on leadership for innovation and business transformation. His most recent book is Big Bet Leadership, Your Transformation Playbook for Winning in the Hyper-Digital Era. As always, listeners, we do create a written summary of what we discuss as well. You'll find that along with a one-page action guide to help you put into action immediately some of the key takeaways from John at productmasterynow.com/485. This podcast was made possible by the Rapid Product Mastery Experience. That's the RPM experience, which helps product VPs and leaders get their product managers and everyone else contributing to product to increase their performance together. Participants build a foundation for high performance by learning the seven essential product knowledge areas and building trust and collaboration in the process. It's not like other training. To see how it's unique and how it can help you, go to productmasterynow.com/RPM. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Chad, thanks for having me on Product Mastery Now. I know I'm going to learn a lot from you and listening to this podcast going forward. So thanks for having me.
Well, likewise, I'm really excited. I'm excited about your book. For anyone seeing it on video here, we got the book and your great experience with Amazon and then since helping organizations figure out how to make these big transformations. But first, I want to maybe take you back in your career a little bit. You know, as I said in the intro, a lot of people get into product management for this desire to have more influence, right? To influence with customers and influence in their organization as well. And I'm curious if somewhere along the line, maybe you received some good advice that helped you think about that a little bit and how to have more successful influence in an organization.
Yeah, I've got two stories I'm going to share. They're both signals. So advice or kind of just a signal. But I had a longtime business partner. We were partners together at Arthur Andersen before I was at Amazon. And then we were partners together for 12 years at Alvarez & Marsal together. And so Steve knows the high points and low points of me extremely well. And one of the things Steve said to me goes, John, you know, after Amazon, your habit, your superpower is always clarifying and simplifying the discussion, the meeting, the communication, whatever it is. And so I recognized that from Steve. I was like, oh, that really is one of the things that I learned at Amazon was how to clarify and simplify. So especially in complex situations, lots of moving parts, that I believe the person that can clarify and simplify the communication is really the controller of the situation. So that was one. The other was, after I left Amazon, one of my key clients was the Gates Foundation. And it was 5 years after I had left Amazon. And Greg came to me and he pulled me into his office and he goes, you know, you do a really nice job of taking the little strategies, inserts, mechanisms from Amazon and delicately implementing and influencing our work. I think you ought to write a book about it. And so I took that as a strong piece of advice. I talked him into being my partner on the Amazon Way and Think Like Amazon. And so that was, you know, the ability to craft a story, influence others at scale through a book was really a great piece of advice, something I had never thought about before kind of that trigger from Greg. And so those were two pieces of advice that really influenced me and how I go about my work and influencing others and driving innovation.
Fantastic. What a great blessing to get that feedback, right? Those two different instances. I'm sure there were others too, but a lot of time we need those insights from other people because we have these blind spots. I was like, well, this thing that you said I'm good at helping to simplify and clarify, that just comes naturally to me. I never kind of thought about that as my superpower, right? That it
And Steve's point was it was completely different after Amazon than before working with me at Amazon. And so that was something I really picked up on. And the other thing I'd note is it was through my work at the Gates Foundation that I first heard this framing, this concept of a big bet. And I always thought like, oh, what a great concept of transformational change is really these are big bets that we were making.
Yeah. So let's talk about big bets, right? So your work now certainly is focusing on helping organizations navigate those big bets. It conveniently is the title of the latest book as well. So that makes that easy. You know, when we're thinking about big bets, lots of ways to interpret that. Ground us on what big bets are and also why are they important to organizations today?
Yeah. So we'll talk about what they aren't and why they're important to organizations. So a big bet is any initiative, strategy, project that has these two attributes. They both have the potential for significant business impact and business upside, and they have significant multi-sided risks or assumptions relative to them. They are not simple initiatives, straightforward capabilities. Now, these typically happen at the enterprise level, but can definitely happen at the team or product level. And, you know, they just aren't your straightforward situations. They get called lots of things, right? They can be a market repositioning. It can be a merger integration situation. It can be a digital transformation. It can be an AI strategy. Like, they get called lots of things, but they have those attributes of high potential value, high potential risk. And we know that most of these fail, right? So there's all sorts of statistics around the failure rate. But one thing to note about the failure rates of, you know, anywhere between 70 and 85% failure rate, those are all errors of commission where an initiative was taken and it didn't work out as scheduled. And the biggest failure point on those is typically on the benefits, right? Like we way under deliver the benefits. But those statistics don't count the errors of omission where a big bet was needed, but one wasn't taken. And you see those when you see a company or a product go from great and loved to average or from average to kind of irrelevant. Those are where a big bet was needed. So the framing of the book is your transformation playbook for winning in the hyper-digital era. And that framing is, I think, critical to answering the question of, you know, why are big bets needed? It's my proposition, my hypothesis that, you know, this past 25, 30 years of, you know, digital change has been essentially the warm-up innings, to use a baseball metaphor, the warm-up innings for what's coming at us in the next era. And that next era is going to be shaped, I talk about kind of three mega forces that are going to shape this next era that we call the hyper-digital era. And the companies that can actually make a core capability out of transformational change, high potential impact, high risk, those are going to be the companies that win because they have this core competency in addition to being operationally excellent and great at incremental moves. They are going to be great at these actual transformational capabilities, these business model changes that are so essential. Those are the big bets.
Absolutely. And as you said, we have seen, you know, both of us have lived through the internet changes that have brought, but today it feels like we're facing so many more. I just saw a little newscast with Kathy Woods, an investor, talking about, you know, we've never had five key tipping points when it comes to advancements in technologies come together at the same point, right? And her framework, she's only, you know, we've only seen two before, and now we have AI and blockchain and others that she talks about. And like, wow, there is a lot of change going on. And with that, a lot of uncertainty because we don't really know where all that's going to end up. And if organizations don't have a handle on being able to recognize the need for change and then managing those transformations, this isn't just simple change management. These are, you know, big, wicked problems that are complex without clear solutions.
Well, you use a term that we use a lot in the the book, which is Wicked Problems. If you were to ask me, John, like, what are you actually good at? I would say I'm good at solving wicked problems. Like, that's what I do with my clients, multi-sided, non-obvious problems or solutions relative to them. And the technology is just one of the mega forces that I think is actually going to be driving this next era. We talk about kind of the change in the labor force and population as a mega force, and the need for our country to drive innovation just to be able to afford the required spending and debt spending that we have. Like, we have to grow the economy. And I think it's those mega forces combined that is really going to create this cyclone of transformational change. There's going to be a lot of new winners. There's going to be a lot of new losers relative to this. And so I think the mix that's coming is, again, going to set the context of transformation has to become a core capability for senior leaders. It's not today. That's the problem that we are trying to address in Big Bet Leadership and our perspective for senior leaders, how to do an important and growing importance aspect of their job, which is driving transformational change.
Yeah, with my professor hat on, teach graduate courses. Traditional MBA programs, we're not teaching students this, right? We're teaching students to how to go into
operational excellence.
Exactly. That's it. It's all about operational excellence.
Incrementalism, which is important. Right. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's just part of the playbook and skill sets that's needed.
Right. Yeah. And thankfully, I get to add the innovation piece to that, which is really good and new to everyone. But we need to combine these things for sure. So I think it'd be really helpful if you could take us through an example, an organization that, you know, faced a transformation, that they took the courage, right? They had the courage to move into it. And what did the leader do, right? What are those critical skills that actually need to be applied?
Yeah. So I have a co-author for this book, Kevin McCaffrey. Kevin drove new business incubation at T-Mobile. He retained me in 2018 as senior innovation advisor, and we stood up a new business incubation capability. But a company that I believe has gone through a decade and more of big bet success. And so he's featured, we talk about four big bet legends in the book, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, John Ledger, and Satya Nadella from Microsoft. And so we've worked for or studied all of them. But the story of T-Mobile, I think, is a really great story. And we start off the book with the story of T-Mobile and how in 2013 at the Consumer Electronics Show, you know, John Ledger stood up and in a profane-filled press conference declared war on the other three major carriers and started what's known as the uncarrier moves. And over the next 5 years, primarily really 8 to 10 years now, T-Mobile underwent 12 sets of what they call the uncarrier moves. These are all in Wikipedia and everything. And it took them from an irrelevant fourth position carrier to a brand and the view as the innovator in a relatively very commoditized business, and created actual value propositions for customers by doing the exact opposite of what the industry did, right? And so, you know, hard to believe, but back in the day in 2013, before T-Mobile changed the game, we had to sign contracts for phones and for carriers, and there were overage fees, and there were roaming fees, and there was all of these customer unfriendly, and John Ledger just essentially led a revolution. T-Mobile has reaped the benefits of these moves. Their stock is up over 700% since the start of this. They're now the market leader. But I think T-Mobile is a undertold story about transformational big bets and how he set up a system for those big bets. And so that was one of the real legends that we studied and got to know and Kevin worked for in really understanding, like, what do these big bet legends do differently than other really good operational leaders? And so we have a theory about this, right? And so our framing on that is that big bet legends do three things. They have habits that are different. They have three habits. we already talked about one of them. They create clarity. The second is they maintain velocity. And the third is they accelerate risk and value, deferring as many other commitments and resources as possible until the big assumptions and the big unknowns are better understood. And so the book is told through the story of how to actually create an executive operating model that puts in place those three essential habits.
Okay, fantastic. I would like to go through those and maybe, you know, hear about how they came out through T-Mobile. I happen to be a T-Mobile customer. This is not a sponsored podcast at all. They were the distant fourth, you know,
exactly,
in the industry. And we're a customer because they've just done such a good job. We travel a lot by RV and they're there almost every time. And that was not the case, you know, a few short years ago. And interestingly, just a side point with the Amazon connection too. One of my listeners a few years ago contacted me. He was a product manager at Amazon. And I've had other friends that have gone there. And usually they say, Chad, this is the most innovative place on the planet. I've never worked for some place that is more innovative, right? At Amazon. He was leaving Amazon for T-Mobile because he had a meeting with Ledger. And it was because of Ledger's his ability to influence him that drew him out and felt like, no, T-Mobile is the most innovative place on the planet, right? So there's something interesting there that you might be able to comment on.
Well, what I can talk about firsthand is, you know, Amazon has, you know, their innovation approach, they would frame it as this working backwards approach, right? So start with the customer, start with the end in mind, work backwards from that. They use written memos and active debate to actually experiment and make both the high stakes decisions as well as the refinements before they start committing resources to it. That's called the working backwards approach. So what Kevin and I did at T-Mobile for this new business incubation was we took it down to first principles. What the mistake that many, I've seen this happen time and time again, former Amazon leaders make is they go, hey, we're just going to implement working backwards at our company. Right. And it typically fails big time because you don't have the culture, the DNA, the corpus of background to be successful. So Kevin and I, from a first principle standpoint, redesigned a working backwards process that fit for T-Mobile. And so a lot of that experience and work is now in Big Bet Leadership, primarily in a chapter that's called Thinking and Outcomes. And what Thinking and Outcomes outlines is a specific approach, I'll call it a methodology. It's a little loose, more forgiving than a methodology, of how to write memos that actually help us create that clarity and sets up the other two critical habits that are the essential underpinnings of being successful at Big Bets.
Okay, fantastic. So still kind of carrying forward one of those best practices from Amazon. I very much appreciate what you share too. In the product management community, there's often discussions about, well, let's take the best practices from, you know, so-and-so, you know, a company that's been successful and apply them to us. And I think there's good utility in that, with the exception, you have to know how they apply to you, right? And a lot of people just know the process without knowing the why behind it. And you have to know the why so you can adapt it to yourself.
Understanding the cultural norms and the natural orientations is critical. So T-Mobile is a very finance-driven organization, almost to a fault. We weren't going to change that. We figured out how to take advantage of that through our application of kind of this memo process at Amazon. And we actually exposed some of that innovation in the book and in a memo that we call the Outcome Financial Memo that really features and pulls forward both where a cost model innovation can be identified, as well as the key assumptions you're making, and figuring out how to put that into your, where those are high risk and high critical assumptions, how do you bring those forward in the experimentation log so that we don't downplay the financial case that's being made here? We feature it as part of the ambiguity that has to be tested away before we go big on our big bets.
Yeah. And also, as you said, you aligned with that, you used it as a resource. So this thing that could be maybe distracting, right, in their decision-making process, you found a way that actually strengthened what you were trying to do for the transformation.
You know, I try to live by the motto of, you know, don't create a transformation in order to get to the transformation, right? So if you need to change everything about how the way a company works or what they believe in or whatnot, like you're just setting yourself in the situation up for failure. So it's like, you know, shrink the change, minimize the transformation to get to the real business transformation and the ambition that lies behind that.
Good. Yeah, there's some key nuggets here that are going by, I know, for listeners that are certainly explained more in the book, right? The experimentation log, shrink the change. These are all good things. The three key activities that you laid out for us, if you can provide us some more clarity on those, maybe, you know, how to like create clear, I said clarity. You know, the first one was create clarity. How did they do that at T-Mobile to kind of get everyone pointed the same way?
Yeah, so in the new business incubation, it was through this kind of memo and debate writing process. And so we, again, kind of innovated and generalized on top of that for the book. But, you know, the first starts with, you know, customer centricity. And so our framing on this is you have to get to the real what sucks. And so the first memo is what we call the what sucks memo. And the reason we like that, the framing on that is because it's easy to talk about all the low and middle grade issues and challenges that your user has, but what's the real suck that would get them to actually switch to buy and to buy at a premium your product or service? So if you can get to that level of understanding through all the customer research, all the use cases and personas work you do, all of that background work, but capstone it with like a singular point of view of like, here's the customer, here's what sucks, and here's our perspective. We use a term that a lot of people are probably familiar with. It doesn't always have to be said in this way, but what's the killer feature? Like, what's the one either use case or feature or combination of things that would actually help solve this suck? That gives you the part of the essential framework to then progress. Once you have a great definition of the suck and the killer feature, then you can do the outcome definition. What is our crystal clear value proposition that would deliver this killer feature and recognizing the risks behind a big bet? What are the 3 to 5, no more? We're always putting constraints on these things because analysis paralysis is the enemy of paced progress here. 3 to 5 critical assumptions or risks or things that have to be true in order to deliver those, that killer feature and that outcome definition. So those are two of the key memos that set up this clarity. And it's not just the memo writing, but it's the willingness to have active debate. Bezos talks about, he wants crystal narratives with messy meetings. And so the having the clear memo and reading those and then allowing kind of wandering in the discussion is part of the combinatory effect here. Writing memos is hard for the writers of that memo, but it makes it much easier for the audience, the senior executives, to actually do their job, which is first to understand the situation and what you're proposing, and then to actually, you know, twist it and turn it and see underlying opportunities and to put it against other potential resource allocation decisions, which are the most important decisions that seniors make. So you're actually making it much easier for the senior leaders to do their job in actually early on shaping and refining and saying yes or no to this potential really good idea, right? We probably have a lot of really good ideas, but we can really only go with a limited number. So it's the ability to separate out the right big bet from all the other good potential ideas. Like, that's the stuff we're working out real early to create that clarity. The second habit is maintain velocity. So, you know, it's easy, and we use that word maintain very specifically because it's really easy, you know, to start off with, you know, vim and vigor and energy and, you know, yes, this is going to be a top priority for everybody. Everybody's committed. Kumbaya. But how quickly do these things just become another, you know, typical project and typical initiative? And that's the thing you have to do differently on big bets. And so we have kind of three chapters on this. A lot of it is about predicting the predictable issues that come along on these big bets, right? So the policies and the naysayers and the stakeholders and the environments that are needed to allow your big bet to have a pace that is unnatural to your typical projects. And so that's the key thing around maintaining velocity, is put it in an environment. Hence, the second section is big bet environment. Put it in an environment where it can succeed. The third critical habit is accelerate risk and value, deferring as much possible as you can get. And this is the one that's probably the most counterintuitive to most senior leaders. What we tend to do is we tend to fall in love with an idea and then we announce it, right? And we start budgeting against it and we start making commitments against it and we line everybody up against this roadmap. But guess what that doesn't allow us to do? It doesn't allow us to actually test and validate those big assumptions that we've been making and allow it to do what it should do, which is to change, to morph, to go forward, to pull back, like whatever it needs to do. And when you are put in that situation, when you're a team member of one of these big bets, you see what's happening. It's like, oh, I'm being signed up for all these commitments. Everybody personally starts, you know, kind of going task-oriented, playing small thinking on this and everything. And that's where the biggest failure points start happening. And the biggest failure points are we start de-risking this by having our ambition go from here to down very low. And thus, we might deliver, you know, the initiative, the bet, but we aren't going to deliver the impact or the promise that went along with it. So those are some basic elements of how to create those three critical habits of big bet legends.
Okay, I like it. So the using a memo process to create clarity, and that's not just the writing of the memo. I know Amazon people spend, product managers spend an enormous amount of effort to try to get that, you know, 6-page memo put together. But so much happens in that debate, right? To understand the idea, and then, as you said, examine it from all kinds of different angles and make it better, right? Make it more suitable for us.
So go ahead. We wrote this book specifically for the senior leadership and the people who serve senior leadership to help them do a better part at their job, right? So it really is at those high stakes meetings where the outcome of all the work that's happened, how do we put the executive and the organization in a better position to do their job? That was really kind of the user that we were writing for in this book, and kind of the problem statement that we were targeting. Because, you know, quite frankly, we saw a gap in the market, and that gap was that there's a lot of really good material for teams on how to do their work relative to kind of this work, but there's very little for the senior executive to help them do their job better, and the teams that serve those senior leaders to help serve those senior leaders better. That was really our orientation as to, you know, who our customer was and what was the problem we were solving for our customer.
Yep, absolutely. Very good. So getting that clarity out, having those active discussions, doing the debate, maintaining velocity so that we actually are taking action, right? And creating an environment that somehow, that I'm sure there's more detail we can dive into, but, you know, deal with the naysayers and the things that are in place to create the barriers. But we need an environment to give this a chance. And then I think there's a lot of wisdom when you talked about, you know, wanting to accelerate the value that's created in a way that doesn't cause people to back away from it. It sounds like, you know, for a product manager, the MVP approach, we're trying to get just the minimum done that actually creates value for others. It doesn't feel like a whole product by itself, because that can make people nervous when we start talking about a thing that is beyond just maybe an experiment, you know, making momentum.
Yeah. And from a product standpoint, what really good product teams do is they have a natural orientation to this, but they sometimes forget about the non-product assumptions and value that need to be tested up front to go along with the product, right? And so we tell the story in the book about in a prior situation where the product team, we had a big concept about a new market, and it got away from us, and too much time, too much effort was spent on doing something that was really hard, which is a billing system, but it wasn't hyper risky, right? Like billing systems exist. Like we know we can do a billing system. The conversion is tough, you know, all that, but way too much kind of linear thinking on how to build something was applied versus recognizing, well, the real risk was a customer acquisition cost. And so what really needed to be done was a little bit of framing on the product and the features and the branding and a ton of testing on customer acquisition costs, deferring out as much infrastructure building as possible. And it just got done in a very typical traditional manner versus kind of in a risk forward manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, identifying those levers that make the big difference, what to focus on, pretty important for us. Okay, I'm excited about your book. I'm excited about those three activities, right, that were evident from the T-Mobile example and other leaders that you have worked with as well. As listeners know, we do enjoy our innovation quotes around here. What do you have for us, and what does that one mean to you?
Yeah, so the quote is a quote that I use at the start of chapter 4, which is titled Think Big but Bet Small. And the quote is from a 15th century Renaissance person, so Michelangelo, who was a painter and a sculptor. And the quote is, "The greater danger for most of us lies not in setting our aim too high and falling short, but in setting our aim too low and achieving the mark." And I think both personally, that is my natural orientation, which is to not think and big enough about what I can accomplish. And it's the typical risk that I see in most typical organizations, which is de-risking by diminishing the goals and the ambition. And so that's why that quote is meaningful for me, and I think is one of the differences of a big bet versus kind of an incremental situation or an incremental innovation is your biggest risk is not having enough ambition and recognizing what to do with that ambition.
Right. I think that's very good. And the other takeaway that fits well with that is back to where we started with just the turbulent times, the rapid pace of change, these key factors that are going to draw us into change, right? Displacement in the workforce, robotics coming, AI, different technologies. Work is going to be different. And if it's not a matter of, as you said earlier, with the statistics of transformations failing, it's the ones we don't attempt that we find out we really need or the organization can't survive. And so we got to get our hands around some of these tools to be able to navigate transformation effectively.
Yeah, you mentioned how Amazon was different. And I think one of the things that makes Amazon different is their willingness to fail and fail and fail and then win. And now they tend to cap the failures, which is the whole goal. You know, people go big bets. Well, that means you're betting big. No, the big is the ambition. The bet is the little amount we place in order to test it out. And I honestly think that's part of the correction that Andy Jassy has been making over the past couple of years. I think a couple of things got that equation a little bit wrong. And so he's been kind of correcting that and everything. But that is that patience and persistence and willingness to be misunderstood is, I won't say unique, but Amazon is the best example of a company that is both operationally excellent and systematic about their big bets.
Yeah, they are the example for that. Absolutely. Very good. Wonderful information. Really good clarity around those three points, starting with clarity about what is it takes for leaders and the leaders.
You got to dog food it, right?
So you got to dog food it. Yep. How can people find out? Obviously, this is on Amazon, among other places, but how can people find out about your book, about the work that you're doing?
Yeah. So the book is both a beautiful hard copy book, which you have a copy of, Kindle, and a really great audio book. We wrote it for an audio experience. So that Amazon or any of your book distributors, bigbetleadership.com, you can find out about us, the work we do, more about, you know, we've got some fun author videos up there. And then, you know, quite frankly, John Rossman at LinkedIn is probably the easiest way to get in touch with me. And I really do enjoy it when people reach out, and I always take a meeting.
Fantastic. You have great depth of experience. Really appreciate you sharing some of that with us, even though it was rather brief. And thankfully, we have the book as a resource among the other three books you have written now. But really, this is a great one for transformation. So I'm glad we could have the conversation and find out about those resources.
Chad, really great to meet you. And thank you for, you know, a great conversation.
Yeah, and listeners, once again, if you want to find the written summary of what we discussed, those links that we just shared as well, and that one-page action guide to help you put these three practices into practice as well, you'll find those at productmasterynow.com/485. Everyone, keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Mastery Now, where product leaders and managers gain product mastery through practical knowledge, influence, and confidence. By listening, you are becoming a product master, creating products customers love. Find additional resources at productmasterynow.com. Keep innovating.